Distinguished members of the forum, distinguished observers and friends, ladies and gentlemen, this afternoon we shall begin our discussion under agenda item 8, future work of the permanent forum, including issues of the Economic and Social Council and emerging issues. We will begin with a discussion on the World Conference on Indigenous Peoples and continue on the discussion on Rio Plus 20 and other emerging issues. To begin the discussion, I give the floor to Raja Devashis Roy, member of the Permanent Forum, to make introductory remarks.
Thank you, Madam Chairperson. Ladies and gentlemen, I would like to confine my intervention to two key future events, the World Conference on Indigenous Peoples and the World Summit known as Rio Plus 20. I believe my other colleagues in the forum will join in with other likely issues that may come up under this heading. I'll first start with the World Conference. A few remarks. The General Assembly decided to organize a high-level plenary meeting of the General Assembly, to be known as the World Conference on Indigenous Peoples, to be held in 2014, in order to share perspectives and best practices on the realization of the rights of Indigenous peoples, including to pursue the objectives of the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. The Presidency of the General Assembly was invited to conduct open-ended consultations with member states and with representatives of Indigenous peoples within the framework of the Permanent Forum, as well as with the Expert Mechanism on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples and the Special Rapporteur on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, in order to determine the modalities for the meeting, including the participation of Indigenous peoples in the conference. We may perhaps draw some parallels with the World Conferences on the Rights of Women, the fourth and so far the last one, having been held in Beijing in 1995. However, while there have been four World Conferences on the subject of women, none so far have been held on the subject of Indigenous peoples. Indigenous peoples, as we all know, constitute a segment of humanity who have not only been the subject of genocide and discrimination, but in most cases have been excluded from the modern process of state building and development. A World Conference on Indigenous Peoples will therefore provide a unique opportunity to provide an insightful understanding of the nature of discrimination faced by Indigenous peoples, historically and currently. And such an understanding will be crucial towards the adoption of measures to eradicate such discrimination and to bring forth an equitable partnership between Indigenous peoples and states as set out in the goals of the first and the second and ongoing decade for Indigenous peoples. The challenge here will be to include Indigenous peoples as full partners in this process. In the case of women's rights, the UN Commission on the Status of Women has played a key role in preparatory and follow-up processes. A similar role for the Permanent Forum, the Expert Mechanism and the Special Rapporteur on Indigenous Peoples as the key UN institutions dealing with Indigenous peoples' rights is only logical, equitable, and pragmatic. We therefore hope that this discussion today will bring forth concrete suggestions on these modalities for the future conference. Madam, if I may add some remarks on the other important agenda item, which is Rio Plus 20. The Permanent Forum certainly welcomes the UN Conference on Sustainable Development, or Rio Plus 20, as we call it, which we hope will be a prime opportunity for the world community to reaffirm the role of all key segments of humanity, including Indigenous peoples, and to strengthen their roles in achieving sustainable development, particularly in a world threatened by climate change. In the first World Conference on Environment and Sustainable Development at Rio in 1992, Indigenous peoples were recognized as one of the quote-unquote major groups, and a specific chapter was devoted to the role in Agenda 21, the major document that resulted from the Rio summit. Then in the following World Summit at the UN General Assembly Special Session at UN Headquarters in 1997, which many call Rio Plus 5, representatives of indigenous peoples addressed a full and formal session of the General Assembly for the very first time. Then, in the World Summit on Sustainable Development at Johannesburg in 2002, the contributions of indigenous peoples to sustainable development were acknowledged. While the formal acknowledgement of their role in sustainable development was modest in relation to the scale of the historical and ongoing contributions towards environmental protection and sustainable development, indigenous peoples themselves articulated the worldview on environmental conservation and sustainable development through such landmark instruments as the Carioca Declaration in 1992, the Kimberley Declaration in 2002. At Carioca, indigenous peoples proudly proclaimed, quote, "We, the indigenous peoples, walk to the future in the footprints of our ancestors," unquote. Among the major pillars of sustainable development are diverse economies, empowered communities, and resilient ecosystems at the local level. And here I borrow some words from one of the regional caucuses. In this, indigenous peoples' customary resource management systems and local livelihoods are tested examples of sustainable use of natural resources, embodying principles on what we nowadays call, quote unquote, green economies. Indigenous peoples, as rights holders and ecosystem managers, have made gigantic contributions towards such environmental governance at all levels, at local, subnational, national, regional, and global levels. The challenge lies in mainstreaming these knowledge systems, innovations, and practices, which Agenda 21 calls, quote unquote, traditional scientific knowledge for all of humanity, with the consent of indigenous peoples and in a spirit of partnership. As in the case of the World Conference on Indigenous Peoples, the modalities for Rio Plus 20, its preparatory phases and its follow-up mechanisms and processes must respect the rights of indigenous peoples, including those acknowledged in the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you for your statement. Continuing with our discussion on the World Conference on Indigenous Peoples, I give the floor to Mr. Armin Ritz, Chef de Cabinet of the President of the General Assembly, to make a statement.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Excellencies, distinguished members of the Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues, distinguished representatives of Indigenous Peoples Organization, distinguished elders, colleagues, ladies and gentlemen. I thank you on behalf of the President of the General Assembly for this invitation, and I am very happy to be here today with you. I hope and I am sure that the 10th session of the Permanent Forum has been going very well so far, and that your discussions have been interesting and fruitful. I am impressed by the high level of participation at this year's forum. This speaks not only to the importance of the promotion and protection of the rights of indigenous peoples in the overall UN context, but also to the shared commitment of indigenous peoples' organizations, UN member states, entities of the UN system, and non-governmental organizations to address the challenges that indigenous peoples face in all parts of the world. One reflection of this shared commitment to the indigenous people is the fact that last December, the General Assembly adopted Resolution 65-198 by consensus and with a large number of co-sponsors from practically all regions of the world. As I am here today to represent the President of the General Assembly, I will start by outlining some of the key issues contained in the resolution, and notably the provision related to the 2014 Conference on Indigenous Peoples. With Resolution 65-198, the General Assembly inter alia decided to expand the mandate of the United Nations Voluntary Fund for Indigenous Population so that it can assist representatives of indigenous peoples, organizations and communities to participate in sessions of the Human Rights Council and of human rights treaty bodies. Further, it urged governments and intergovernmental and non-governmental organizations to continue to contribute to the United Nations Voluntary Fund for Indigenous Populations and the Trust Fund for the Second International Decade of the World's Indigenous People. This is particularly important given the urgent need for resources for the Voluntary Fund. Then, the resolution welcomed furthermore the increased support by states for the Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples and encouraged those states that have not done so to consider supporting the Declaration. But most importantly, the General Assembly decided to organize a high-level plenary meeting of the General Assembly to be known as the World Conference on Indigenous People to be held in 2014 in order to share perspectives and best practices on the realization of the rights of indigenous peoples, including to pursue the objectives of the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. Finally, in this regard, it invites the President of the General Assembly to conduct open-ended consultations with Member States and with representatives of the Indigenous Peoples in the framework of the Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues, as well as with the Expert Mechanism on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples and the Special Rapporteur, in order to determine the modalities for the meeting, including the participation of indigenous peoples in the conference. The Office of the President of the General Assembly has been actively engaged with Bolivia as the main sponsor of the resolution, as well as other key sponsors and the Secretariat of the Forum in the lead-up to today's session. While we all recognize that the World Conference will take place only in 3 years from now and under a different presidency of the General Assembly, we also endeavor to make sure that the momentum created last fall will be maintained and continuously increased as we approach the actual date of the conference. Today, in this sense, is a starting point. It is the first occasion to hear the views of the representatives of indigenous peoples on the World Conference. The President of the General Assembly has sent a letter to all Member States in order to draw their attention to today's meeting and has invited them to be present in order to listen to your views. From today up until 2014, the Permanent Forum has a central role to play and is uniquely qualified to give input on the modalities of the conference, as well as at the later stage on its outcome. The Forum attracts each year a wide range of representatives of indigenous people from all regions of the world and with the diverse thematic expertise. This makes the Forum a unique sounding board for the process in the lead-up to the conference. While at this stage it is too early to go into details of the modalities, the dimension of the active participation of representatives of indigenous peoples in the conference is an important one. The recommendations of the Forum, which will be adopted at the end of the session, will constitute a first building block for the further consultations on the World Conference. The President of the General Assembly is ready to transmit these recommendations to all Member States once they are available and to thus encourage all actors to keep discussing, to keep exchanging ideas and to develop a common vision on how the conference, with the effective participation of indigenous people, can be a successful one. 2014 marks the end of the second international decade of the world indigenous peoples, and is therefore an excellent opportunity to take stock and exchange good practices and renew our shared commitment. I'm looking forward to hear your views and thank you again for your attention.
I thank Mr. Ritz for his statement. I will now open the floor to the participants inscribed on the speakers to make their statements on agenda item 8. I invite PEI Sue from the Global Indigenous Youth Caucus.
Hi, home, Madam Chair. The Global Indigenous Youth Caucus would like to extend our support for the World Conference on Indigenous People in 2014 and ask to participate in all stages of the event, including conference planning, discussion, and review of issues facing Indigenous peoples. In paragraph 101 in its seventh session, the Permanent Forum recommend that Indigenous youth continue to contribute to the decision-making process concerning. Therefore, we, the voices of Indigenous youth, expect extra attention to be paid to the following recommendations. Indigenous youth should also continue to contribute to other UN conferences, including the Rio Plus 20 Conference on Sustainable Development in 2012. In its seventh session in paragraph 100, the Permanent Forum recognized the contribution Indigenous youth can make to the particular discussion of climate change or mitigations. This is most important for Indigenous youth to carry on the work of our elders, protecting our lands, territory, and resources, and thereby maintaining our cultural heritage. Accordingly, Global Indigenous Youth Caucus makes the following recommendations. First, the Permanent Forum recommend the Indigenous youth member to represent and enforce the view and needs of Indigenous youth. Second, we request the United Nations ECOSOC Youth Unit and Interagency Support Group to guarantee nomination and participation of at least 2 youth representatives for all relevant planning stages of the World Conference on Indigenous Peoples and the Rio Plus 20 Conference, and all subsequent UN high-level conferences. The Global Indigenous Youth Caucus would be willing to coordinate these rules. Third, that a strategic plan action plan for a World Conference on Indigenous People to be developed for consideration by the next Permanent Forum in 2012. This is to give all member and Indigenous people, including youth, to consider the issues for well-developed discussions. Fourth, the Permanent Forum and the World Conference on Indigenous People are strongly urged and requested to include an agenda item focusing on special needs of Indigenous women, children, and youth, considering their particular vulnerability and capability. In addition to the participation in the above, we strongly urge the following vital issue pertinent to Indigenous youth to be addressed. First, increase public health awareness of high suicide rates, diabetes, HIV, AIDS, drug and substance abuse among Indigenous youth. We call more funding to be allocated to peer-to-peer education and prevention strategies. Second, we request the Permanent Forum to appoint an interagency support group to conduct a study regarding pre-existing and emerging issues, such as urban Indigenous youth displacement, unrecognized and underrepresented Indigenous youth, and their access and connection to land, culture, and protection as it relates to international human rights mechanism. A study should be conducted to examine Indigenous youth that are particularly susceptible to the effect of modernization at the expense of the loss of our traditional cultural identity. Third, education is essential to youth empowerment as our fundamental rights. We call for equal access to education designed for our needs that reflects our worldview. We call for greater support for indigenous education at academic, policy, and financial level, which will assist to end discrimination of the indigenous people and promote respect of our culture, language, ritual, and traditional knowledge. We also call for a continuous fight to preserve and restore our indigenous language. Fourth, the modern sovereign state defined border lines they were not in respect to indigenous territories. Therefore, we strongly request the permanent forum and relevant decision-making body in the UN to grant access to the permanent forum on our indigenous nation rather than our nationality. Fifth, we request the permanent forum to ensure the participation of indigenous youth representation to partake all associated meetings and conferences regarding access and benefit sharing. In addition, we request the permanent forum act as an acting internal review board for access and beneficiary rights. Thank you, Madam Chair. Alain.
Thank you for your statement. I give the floor to Ambassador Pablo Solon from the government of Bolivia.
Muchísimas gracias.
Thank you very much, Madam Chairperson. The holding of the World Conference on Indigenous Peoples in 2014 is very important. And in order to ensure it's a success, we need to begin as soon as possible with embarking upon a substantive discussion. Prior to that, it is crucial to conclude the negotiating and adoption process on the resolution for the modalities of this conference on Indigenous peoples. We accord great importance to the views and conclusions of this Indigenous Forum on this matter. We believe that the modalities resolution should be adopted no later than the end of this year in order to afford sufficient time for participation and deliberation of the representatives of the indigenous peoples in the various continents and indeed worldwide. This modalities resolution should determine the upshot, the outcome expected from the conference. We've clearly seen that its objective is an exchange of views and best practices on the realization of the indigenous people's rights. Secondly, to exchange views on compliance with the objectives of the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. And thirdly, to assess progress made in achieving the purpose and objectives of the second international decade of indigenous peoples. Now, these objectives, in our opinion, should be fleshed out in two types of document, a final document encompassing all aspects, and secondly, an action plan for the next 15 years. The next issue to be spelled out in the resolutions, the modalities resolution, is what the possible timeline should be for the preparatory meetings for this Conference on Indigenous Peoples. We believe that the best time for having these preparatory dialogues with the broadest possible participation of Indigenous peoples is in conjunction with, before or after, the Forum of Indigenous Peoples meetings. And thus, we think it would be important once the resolutions, the modalities resolution has been adopted, it's important for us to have the first substantive exchange of views among and from the participants from the indigenous peoples during the next forum of Indigenous Peoples in 2012, with a second preparatory meeting in 2013, and lastly a third preparatory meeting in 2014, prior to the holding of the World Conference on Indigenous Peoples. In turn, it is vital to promote the holding of regional events in the seven socio-cultural regions, including the Global Caucus and the Women's Caucus, so that proposals are forthcoming from the key players themselves in each and every region. Lastly, there is a need to agree on the broadest possible involvement of Indigenous Peoples' representatives in the World Conference on Indigenous Peoples to be held in 2014, in our opinion, preceded, that is, by that third preparatory meeting. We think it's important for this 10th session on Indigenous Peoples to take a stand on these matters so that we have sufficient inputs for a negotiating process on the modalities resolution, which we hope may be wound up by the end of this year, as I said. Finally, with respect to Rio Plus 20, Madam, may I express the view of the plurinational state of Bolivia, and that is that it is vital for this 2012 conference to retrieve the visions of respect for nature and Mother Earth through recognition of the rights to nature practiced and upheld and preserved by the indigenous peoples across the globe. Thank you.
Ambassador Solon for his statement. I give the floor to Muriel Borst from the Global Indigenous Women Caucus.
Is it on? I do. Greetings, Madam Chair and distinguished delegates. Mindful of the report on the Permanent Forum 9th Session on May 19, 2010, and its acknowledgement of the preliminary study on the impact on Indigenous peoples of the international legal construct known as the Doctrine of Discovery. February 4, 2010, by Special Rapporteur Tanya Ganella Fischner. The preliminary study and its call for additional attention, study, and documentation of the racism of Christian discovery and the manner in which the doctrine of Christian discovery has been constructed, elaborated, applied, and extended in law, policy, social cultural practices through both and religious practices, and to set the stage for its eradication and reversal as a fundamental element of colonialism, imperialism, as well as violence against indigenous women and Mother Earth. Madam Chair, we'd like to make these following recommendations. We, the Global Women's Caucus, recommend that an international expert group meeting be convened January 2012 to discuss the findings and implications of the preliminary study of the Doctrine of Discovery and to present its findings to the 11th session. Further study and review will be needed to show extent and how the Doctrine of Discovery and the framework of domination are applied to indigenous peoples throughout the world. Madam Chair, we would also like to remind the Permanent Forum of the recommendations for future work that have been made in previous agenda items at the 10th session. We call upon the Permanent Forum to organize in the future an expert group meeting to address impacts and environmental toxins on the health of indigenous women, including on their reproductive health. We also urge the Permanent Forum to make health a special theme of one of its sessions. Madam Chair, we would welcome the Permanent Forum's recognition that Indigenous peoples' development is linked with education and urge the Permanent Forum to further advance its recommendation that the United Nations Educational, Scientific, and Cultural Organization and other United Nations agencies convene an expert group meeting on bilingual, intercultural, and multilingual education. In closing, Madam Chair, and our last recommendation, without prejudice to the work on the doctrine of discovery, we support the call for a proposal for the creation of a doctrine of reconciliation. We further support the call for an expert group seminar on truth and reconciliation commissions as proposed by the expert mechanism on the rights of indigenous peoples in its third report to be hosted by the High Commissioner for Human Rights, Madam Pele. Thank you, Madam Chair, for your consideration of our recommendations.
Thank you for your statement. Mr. Leif Domshel, Senior Advisor of the Sami Parliament in Norway, you have the floor.
Madam Chair, in the presentation given last week by the President of the Sami Parliament in Norway, Mr. Egil Olli, he announced an invitation to meet in Alta in Sápmi the second week in June 2013. The objective is to facilitate for concerted input and influence to the World Conference in 2014 by the indigenous peoples. The Sami Parliament in Norway is prepared to take responsibility so that indigenous peoples may meet in time before the 2014 World Conference. We have carried out a feasibility study to find out our capacity to host such a preparatory conference in 2013 in a small town like Alta in Sápmi. Under the precondition that the final decision to accept our offer can be made no later than May 1st, 2012, we will take the responsibility to host this preparatory conference. At the outset, there are some uncertainties regarding the possible outcome of the World Conference in 2014. It will end the second decade on the world indigenous peoples. It will mark the 7 years after the adoption of the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. How will indigenous peoples be involved in the preparation towards the World Conference in 2014 and at the conference itself? The Sami Parliament believes there is an urgent need to start regional processes on the content of and strategies towards the World Conference in 2014 as soon as possible. Such processes should preferably also feed into a common process among the indigenous peoples from all regions. Madam Chair, if we decide to meet in Alta in 2013, that should ideally be the end of a consensus-building process among indigenous peoples, and that we should be able to adopt a common platform for indigenous peoples' input to be negotiated with the state parties at the World Conference in 2014. We would suggest a setup of an Indigenous Peoples Coordinating Committee for 2013 and 2014. The Coordinating Committee should be constituted by prominent members representing at least all the 7 Indigenous regions, as well as Indigenous women and youth, and will have the primary responsibility to facilitate the drafting of common strategies and positions. In addition, it will have to decide on the modalities for the conferences in Alta in 2013. Questions like, how do we ensure high-level indigenous peoples' participation? How will states be involved at the conference? How will it involve UN agencies? How can we utilize existing processes in our preparations towards 2013 and 2014.
For us, it is important that the continued process in this regard is owned and executed by indigenous peoples themselves. Our responsibility would be to make sure that there is a link to the local organizer of the 2013 meeting and to facilitate the conference itself. We hope that we during these days could continue exchanging ideas on how those responsibilities could be carried further on. Thank you, Madam Chair.
I thank Mr. Domshel for his statement and thank the Sami Parliament in Norway for offering to host a preparatory conference in 2013. I now give the floor to Kenneth Deer from the North American Indigenous Caucus.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. The statement I'm about to make is based on our discussions over the last couple of days and may not include the other issues that may have been arise already today. We would like to begin by thanking the government of Bolivia for its initiative in proposing a world conference on indigenous peoples, along with the states who co-sponsored the resolution and the UN Third Committee members who voted in favor. The idea of a world conference on indigenous peoples is an intriguing one. It inspires visions of a world body holding discussions about the rights of indigenous peoples with representatives of states and indigenous peoples on an equal footing, a venue where the Charter of United Nations can be implemented, quote, to establish conditions under which justice and respect for the obligations arising from treaties and other sources of international law can be maintained and to promote social progress and better standards of life in a larger freedom, unquote. Also keeping in mind Article 2 of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, which reads, quote, everyone is entitled to all the rights and freedoms set forth in this declaration without distinction of any kind, such as race, color, sex, language, religion, political or other opinion, national or social origin, property, birth, or other status. With these obligations, we believe that indigenous peoples can benefit from a world conference as long as indigenous representatives have full and equal participation without discrimination in all areas and levels of the planning, preparatory meetings, development of the agenda, the conference itself, and most importantly, in the development and finalization of any declaration or plan of action produced. The UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples affirms in Article 18 that indigenous peoples have the right to participate in decision-making in matters which would affect their rights through representatives chosen by themselves in accordance with their own procedures, as well as to maintain and develop their own indigenous decision-making institutions. Also of relevance is Preamble Paragraph 24, which solemnly proclaims the Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples is a standard of achievement to be pursued in a spirit of partnership and mutual respect. And Preamble Paragraph 15, which states, considering also that treaties, agreements, and other constructive arrangements and the relationship they represent are the basis for a strengthened partnership between indigenous peoples and states. Since one of the stated objectives of the World Conference is to review best practices for the implementation of the Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, it will be essential that the planning, organization, structure, and execution of the conference be itself an example of a best practice based on full cooperation, collaboration, and real partnership between indigenous peoples and states. We support the inclusion of the members of the Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues, the members of the Expert Mechanism on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, and the Special Rapporteur on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples in the consultation process of the conference. Added to these UN experts, we urge the inclusion of direct representation of indigenous peoples. Since indigenous peoples are marginalized and are the poorest in the world, it would be necessary to develop a fund to finance indigenous representation in all the preparatory meetings and the conference itself. It is very early in the process of developing this world conference. We look forward to offering additional recommendations as the process moves forward. We will maintain our call for a transparent, open and fully participatory process. The North American region calls upon the Permanent Forum to recommend to the UN General Assembly through ECOSOC that these criteria be accepted as a basis for work at the World Conference in keeping with the spirit and content of the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. Finally, we wish to encourage all states, UN agencies, NGOs, foundations, and other actors to support the World Conference as an opportunity to support full implementation and realization of the rights of Indigenous peoples in the world in partnership and with respect. Thank you, Madam Chair.
I thank Mr. Dare for his statement. I give the floor to Mr. Yasser Jimenez from the Government of Nicaragua.
Muchas gracias.
Thank you, Madam Chairperson. Nicaragua welcomes this World Conference of the Indigenous Peoples of the United Nations, which is scheduled for 2014. As one of the main co-sponsors of the resolution, A-RES, ACAS 565128, adopted in 2010, which decided to have this high-level plenary meeting at the General Assembly, we believe that the aim of sharing views and best practices on the realization of Indigenous people's rights is a necessity, especially to attain the objectives in the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous People. Nicaragua supports the comprehensive, full representation of Indigenous peoples. We wish to place great emphasis on the fact that it's necessary to enjoy the participation of these Indigenous peoples, not only at that conference, but also in the preparatory phases. And we need to safeguard this so that at each and every stage we have the participation and involvement of the representatives of the Indigenous peoples. We also support the adoption of a final document from that conference, as well as an action plan for 2015 to 2030. There's a need to enhance implementation of the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous People and the agreed objectives. With respect to funding, we think that the United Nations does need to promote through existing mechanisms this funding. Likewise, there then needs to be the managerial capacity in place so that through voluntary contributions, we may foster the participation of representatives. And I place considerable emphasis on this because it's the Indigenous peoples who can alert us from their own experience to the issues. So we believe that it is vital to guarantee their participation in the preparatory stages. And I say that because it is as of now, from today, that we begin the negotiations on that process. We hope that it culminates in a success for our Indigenous peoples. Thank you.
Mr. Jimenez, for his statement. Donna Ann Campbell from the Pacific Caucus has the floor.
Thank you, Madam Chairperson. The Pacific Caucus are pleased to be given the opportunity to contribute to the discussion of two important future conferences, the United Nations Conference on Sustainable Development, which will occur in Brazil between 4 and 6 June 2012, and the World Indigenous Peoples Conference, which will occur in 2014. Sustainable development is important for the members of the Pacific, and we are pleased that the Conference on Sustainable Development will be at the highest level, including heads of state and government representatives. It is very important that there is a global political commitment to sustainable development. Many of the nations within the Pacific, including Micronesia, Tahiti, Tuvalu, Kiribati, the Torres Strait Islands, the Marshall Islands, and coastal areas are the ones who have the most to lose if climate change and rising sea levels are not immediately addressed. In New York this week, a conference is occurring at the Columbia Law School entitled Threatened Island Nations: Legal Implications of Rising Seas and a Changing Climate. We recommend that the findings from that conference and other meetings specifically about climate change in the Pacific be communicated at the Sustainable Development Conference in an effort to ensure that the urgent concerns of the Pacific nations are addressed. In 2012, the Sustainable Development Conference will focus on two themes: a green economy in the context of sustainable development and poverty eradication, and B, the institutional framework for sustainable development. With regards to the first theme, we stress the need for all lands, but in particular island nations, such as those in the Pacific, to develop methods of sustainable and self-sufficient food production. Food security is essential to addressing issues of self-determination, poverty, and health issues facing many indigenous peoples. With regards to the institutional framework, it is important to include indigenous peoples at all levels and to recognize that Western concepts of economic and sustainable development are not always in line with indigenous concepts. An example of this misconception is the insistence by Western countries to equate our Mother Earth as a commodity, putting a price on every aspect of it, including carbon produced. We in the Pacific know that for indigenous peoples, nature is an intricate part of our being that cannot be valued monetarily. Our Mother Earth is priceless, but she is endowed with certain rights that command responsibility to those who use it. Indigenous peoples bring special and often ancient knowledge about Mother Nature and must be consulted and supported to be involved in all global discussions on sustainable development and the environment. We now move to the World Indigenous Peoples Conference, which is proposed to occur in 2014. We thank the United Nations for their recognition of the rights of indigenous peoples by proposing that this meeting occur as a high-level plenary meeting of the General Assembly. This will be a significant meeting for indigenous peoples, which we hope will assist us to move us forward within the United Nations systems and in negotiations with member states about our rights contained within the Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, including our right to self-determination. From our perspective, the most important part of organizing the conference will be ensuring that there is adequate indigenous representation. We want indigenous peoples all around the world, including the Pacific, to be represented and included in this dialogue, and we want to ensure that during the meeting, indigenous peoples are on equal footing with the member states. It must be acknowledged that indigenous peoples in the world are the most disadvantaged, and many face poverty on a daily basis. Because of this, steps must be taken by the United Nations to provide financial support to indigenous peoples to enable us to actively participate in the organizing of the conference and to attend it. We recommend that an organizing committee of indigenous peoples with representatives from each region as delineated by the permanent forum be convened with a mandate of promoting inclusive and representative indigenous participation at the conference. We seek the support of the United Nations Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues in this regard. With regards to the venue, we ask that consideration be given to hosting the conference in a location where indigenous peoples are easily able to obtain visas, and suggest opening the conference venue up to bids from prospective member states. Finally, with regards to the agenda for the conference, we recommend that the focus be on the implementation of the declaration, including promoting best practice examples, relationship building between indigenous peoples the world over, and how we might better be able to work together, and improving relationships between indigenous peoples and member states. We also recommend that there be space within the conference to allow indigenous groups to present on issues most impacting their peoples. We recommend that the United Nations Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues, 1, recommend that the United Nations Economic and Social Council make funding available for at least one nominated indigenous representative from each region recognized by the Permanent Forum to attend the 2012 Conference on Sustainable Development. 2, recommend that the Economic and Social Council make funding available to ensure each nominated indigenous representative selected to attend the 2012 Conference on Sustainable Development and any others that are able to self-fund their attendance are given an opportunity to meet with each and other and prepare their participation prior to the conference. 3, develop a database to record best practice examples of programs and activities which implement the Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, both in its entirety and with regards to the specific articles. 4, convene an Indigenous Steering Committee comprising of at least one representative from each of the regions of the Permanent Forum and supported by at least one member of the Permanent Forum to work on Indigenous participation and involvement in the World Indigenous Peoples Conference proposed for 2014. 6, recommend that the Economic and Social Council make funding available for the Steering Committee referred to in Recommendation 4 to engage in regular meetings between now and 2014 and each be funded to attend the conference. And 6, request that the United Nations Voluntary Funds mandate be expanded to allow for other Indigenous people to attend and participate in the World Indigenous Peoples Conference in 2014. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Vicky Tauli Corpus from the Asia Caucus have the floor.
Thank you very much, Madam Chairperson, distinguished members of the forum, ladies and gentlemen. This is a statement from the Asia Indigenous Peoples Caucus on the future work of the Permanent Forum regarding the World Conference on Indigenous Peoples and Rio Plus 20. The Asia Caucus welcomes the adoption of the General Assembly of the resolution to hold a World Conference on Indigenous Peoples on 2014. We extend our appreciation to the government of Bolivia for presenting this resolution and to the other governments who have co-sponsored this resolution. In order to make this historical World Conference on Indigenous Peoples truly meaningful and substantive, it is an imperative to take concrete steps in order to shape the outcome of this conference based on the aspirations of Indigenous peoples. Along this line, the Asia Indigenous Peoples Caucus wishes to present the following preparatory steps and processes. The activities shall be officially recognized as preparatory activities for the World Conference, and funding support shall be sought from various sources to enable the implementation of these activities. First, the formation of an international coordinating committee of indigenous peoples before the end of this year. It shall be composed of 2 representatives for each region and 2 representatives for each of the indigenous youth and women's caucus. This body shall coordinate closely with the Permanent Forum and the Secretariat, as well as to the group of state sponsors of the resolutions related to the preparation for the World Conference. Second, the conduct of a global workshop of indigenous peoples this year, 2011 or early 2012, to discuss the outcome framework of the World Conference of Indigenous Peoples based on the aspirations and key priorities of indigenous peoples. The workshop shall be composed of the members of the coordinating committee with additional representatives from each region and representatives of the Permanent Forum, the Expert Mechanism on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, and the Rapporteur, Special Rapporteur. Further, this workshop shall deliberate on preparatory activities at the national and regional levels. Third, the conduct of regional preparatory conferences. This gathering shall deliberate on indigenous peoples' issues for resolutions that should be taken up by the World Conference of Indigenous Peoples, and this shall be fed into the outcome framework that shall be agreed upon at the global level. These conferences shall ensure appropriate representation and participation of indigenous peoples in different within the region and in the different regions. Fourth, the conduct of the World Conference, the Global Conference of the Indigenous Peoples, as a final preparatory step in 2013. We certainly welcome and appreciate the announcement of the Sami Parliament earlier to host this final gathering by June 2013. This conference will gather hundreds of indigenous peoples, including indigenous parliamentarians from all regions and countries, to consolidate the result of the regional workshops, and this shall feed to the outcomes of the final of the World Conference on Indigenous Peoples. The lobbying with member states. After the final resolution for concrete outcomes for the UN World Conference will emerge from the final preparatory meeting that will be held in Norway, there should be a sustained lobbying work at the national, regional, and global levels to ensure the broadest support of states to the resolutions and recommendations. In relation to the permanent forum, in relation to the Rio Plus 20 conference, we have held a side event last week, which was sponsored by Tubtuba and the Indigenous Environment Network, who are the organizing partners of the Commission on Sustainable Development for Rio Plus 20. We welcome this conference on sustainable development. The Asia Caucus welcomes this conference on sustainable development as a prime opportunity for the world community to reaffirm and embed indigenous people's vital roles in sustainable development. The foundations of the three pillars of sustainable development are diverse economies, empowered communities, and resilient ecosystems at the local level, indigenous peoples' customary resource management systems, and local livelihoods are tested examples of sustainable use of natural resources, embodying principles of green economies. Indigenous peoples, as rights holders and ecosystem managers, have important contributions towards sound environmental governance at all levels, at local, subnational, national, regional, and global levels, and particularly in applying ecosystems-based approaches. We call on the Permanent Forum to give, and other UN bodies and bilateral donors, to give their full support to the efforts of indigenous peoples and other stakeholders, member states, and the UN agencies to ensure the full and effective participation of indigenous peoples in the preparation of Rio Plus 20 and beyond. We also call on the member states to ensure indigenous presence at Rio Plus 20, including indigenous peoples' representatives in official delegations to Rio Plus 20 and the preparatory regional implementation meetings, which will be held in the various regions. Finally, we call on the Permanent Forum to think about setting up a three-day international expert group meeting on the theme Indigenous Peoples and Sustainable Development, and request that the results of this meeting be reported in the subsequent sessions of the Forum and the UN Conference on Sustainable Development. Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Thank you for your statement. I call on Kalin Sisk Franco from the International Indigenous Women Forum.
Winamamuntu Tinding, distinguished members of the United Nations Permanent Forum, the International Indigenous Women's Forum would like to take this opportunity to present the following recommendations under item 8 to the UN Entity for Gender Equality and Empowerment of Women, UN Women. 1, to take into consideration the recommendation of the forum related to indigenous women and girls into the 6 goals of the development results framework, from as well as the 9th outputs of Management Results Framework on its UN Women's Strategic Plan 2011-2013. 2, to develop a policy on engagement with Indigenous women and girls within the framework of the Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples and the United Nations Development Group guidelines on Indigenous issues. To provide grants to Indigenous women's organizations to advance their rights and to enhance the women's participation in their own development processes through the Fund for Gender Equality and the UN Trust Fund to end violence against women. 4, to ensure the participation of Indigenous women's organizations in all consultative processes, including the establishment of an Executive Advisory Council on Indigenous women's issues. 5, to ensure the participation of Indigenous women at the high-level meeting on addressing desecration of land, desecration and drought in the context of sustainable development and poverty eradication in September 2011, the 56th session on the Commission on the Status of Women entitled The Empowerment of Rural Women in Their Roles in Poverty and Hunger Eradication, Development and Current Challenges in February 2012, as well as Rio Plus 20 and the Conference on Sustainable Development in June 2012. Recommendations to the Permanent Forum, 6, to reiterate the recommendation contained in paragraph 12 of the report on its third session and recommends that IOM, OHCHR, UN Women, UNICEF, ACNUR, UNODC, and IOL report on their progress in addressing the particular vulnerability of Indigenous women, migrants, and girls, including alarming trend of trafficking within and across national and international borders. 7, to reiterate the recommendation contained in paragraph 52 of the report on its fifth session and recommends that the Secretary General's Special Representative on Sexual Violence in Armed Conflict conduct a specific study on the situation of Indigenous women in armed conflict and submit a report to the Permanent Forum on at its 11th session. And 8, to appoint special rapporteur among the UN Permanent Forum members to undertake a study into the extent of violence against Indigenous women and girls under Article 22(2) of the Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, and convene an international expert group meeting on the theme Combating Violence Against Indigenous Women and Girls. Chalama Sukeda. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you for your statement. Jennifer Coinante from the Indigenous Peoples of Africa Coordinating Committee, you have the floor.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I make my presentation on behalf of the African Caucus, and the African Caucus support the idea of the World Conference on Indigenous People in 2014. However, we would like to see the conference being Indigenous people driven. For now almost 5 decades, since African government regained self-rule, the socioeconomic and cultural condition of Indigenous people across Africa has deteriorated. Environmental capital within Indigenous territories continues to decline, bringing with it resource-based conflict, starvation, and death. More than 8 million Indigenous peoples in Africa, including women and children, have been born in the problem and continues to suffer its consequences. Rapid urbanization within Indigenous peoples' territories poses a serious threat to the preservation of Indigenous cultures, as it brings with it cultural erosions, wiping Indigenous languages and knowledge and the cultures and ways of life. The consequences of climate change have compounded extinction of indigenous cultures, food and life support systems. The Yaku, which is a community that I come from in Kenya, are an example of the disappearing communities with a small population of not more than 4,000 people, and through only, and now there are only three people who can speak the language. Indeed, it is no doubt that indigenous people territories bear the world's greatest resource. Consequent challenges in arising from resource extraction activities, including deforestation, an example of Congo Basin Forest, Mau Forest in Kenya, and other small African tropical forests, where the country's governments across the Africa continues to extract resources within indigenous territories without free, prior, informed consent. Lack of public awareness and literal policy dialogue has led to the continued spate of right violation against indigenous people in Africa. Weak international human rights education culminated to constriction of space for social change, action, and distinct. Governments across Africa do not have a policy in place on indigenous peoples. The lack of an indigenous people policy means that legislation cannot be put in place to safeguard the rights of indigenous people. In addition, it is policy possession that would provide legitimacy. Indigenous people from Africa believe that World Conference will guarantee the enjoyment of indigenous people's rights and freedoms, bringing with it the rebirth of hope and the opportunity among indigenous peoples in Africa. We recommend and call upon the UN Permanent Forum and other UN agencies to establish a World Conference Fund to support different regions' meetings and forums based on different walks of life, including youths, women, elders, and the working groups or committees. And this should be in place as soon as possible, since we have a very short time, so that the work could begin on preparation for the World Conference on Indigenous People. Thank you.
Thank you. Amala Groom from the Indigenous Peoples Organization of Australia. You have the floor.
We begin by acknowledging that we are meeting today on Haudenosaunee territory. We pay our respects to their elders and ancestors, and to the elders and ancestors of all the Indigenous delegates attending the Permanent Forum this year. The Indigenous Peoples Organisation Network of Australia welcomes the opportunity to contribute to the discussion of the World's Indigenous Peoples Conference, which will occur in 2014, and the United Nations Conference on Sustainable Development, which will occur in Brazil in 2012. We support the proposed World Indigenous Peoples Conference in 2014 and are pleased that the meeting will provide an opportunity to reflect upon and review the implementation of the Programme of Action for the second decade on the world's Indigenous peoples and decide on future action. We strongly support the statements of the Pacific and the Sami, who have called for an Indigenous Peoples Coordinating Committee to be convened to organise Indigenous participation at the World Conference and the proposed preparatory meeting at ALTA in 2013. We agree with both statements, which recommend the Steering Committee be convened as soon as possible and be given the opportunity to meet and organise before the conference. We further agree that the committee should be comprised of representatives from at least seven Indigenous regions, as well as Indigenous women and youth. We note that due to Indigenous disadvantage the world over, there is a great need for the United Nations, NGOs, member states, and civil society to provide resources to enable Indigenous people to attend the conference and actively participate in the organising of it. We highlight the importance of Indigenous participation in the development of the conference agenda. We recommend that the United Nations seek submissions from Indigenous peoples and organisations to ensure effective participation, transparency and inclusiveness as an exercise of Indigenous peoples' right to self-determination. Sustainable development is a key issue for Indigenous peoples in Australia, and it is pleasing that the Conference on Sustainable Development will include heads of state and government representatives. However, there is a fear with such high-level participation that the voices and ancient knowledge of Indigenous peoples, including the Indigenous peoples of Australia, will not be heard. In Australia, sustainable development and climate change are areas dominated by non-Indigenous scientists and other professionals who have Western qualifications that allow them to speak on such issues. There is a lack of Indigenous peoples in Australia with these qualifications, which means our voices are not heard and our ancient knowledge is not considered. Even when Indigenous peoples of Australia are able to obtain the Western qualifications needed, often they are then expected to speak in terms of their Western training rather than from their Indigenous knowledge, which has been passed down from time immemorial. With regards to the institutional framework of the conference, it is especially important to support the attendance of and provide a platform for Indigenous peoples who are the holders of traditional knowledge and the keepers of the most ancient cultures in the world. We recommend that the United Nations Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues, 1, convene an Indigenous Steering Committee comprising of at least one representative from each of the regions of the Permanent Forum, including Indigenous women and youth, and supported by at least one member of the Permanent Forum to work on Indigenous participation and involvement in the World's Indigenous Peoples Conference proposed for 2014. 2, recommend that the Economic and Social Council make funding available for the steering committee referred to in Recommendation 1 to engage in regular meetings between now and 2014, and that each member be funded to attend the conference. 3, request that United Nations Voluntary Funds mandate be expanded to allow Indigenous people to attend and participate in the World's Indigenous Peoples Conference in 2014. 4, recommend that the United Nations Economic and Social Council make funding available for at least one nominated Indigenous representative from each region recognised by the Permanent Forum to attend the 2012 Conference on Sustainable Development. 5, recommend that the Economic and Social Council make funding available to ensure that each nominated Indigenous representative selected to attend the 2012 Conference on Sustainable Development and any others that are able to self-fund their attendance are given an opportunity to meet with each other and prepare their participation prior to the conference. 6, conduct a study on the participation of Indigenous peoples in sustainable development and climate change and make recommendations as to how traditional Indigenous knowledge can be better incorporated into global work on these issues. And 7, recommend that the Permanent Forum appoint an Indigenous expert on sustainable development and climate change who has a mandate to seek the views of Indigenous peoples and advocate those views internationally. Thank you, Madam Chairperson.
Thank you for your statement. I give the floor to Jorge Agurto Aguilar, Comité Intertribal Memoria y Ciencia Indígena, Red de Comunicadores Indígenas del Perú, Periódico Mapuche Azkintue.
Yes,
this is entitled Indigenous Peoples' Rights to Communication, a huge vacuum in the recommendations of the Permanent Forum. despite the fact that communication is an essential and fundamental activity for human life and society, because without communication there cannot be coexistence, development, identity, the affirmation of language and culture, the lack of our own resources, the dominance of privately owned media whose content is unrelated to the reality of our people, creates a serious breach and inequity that weakens and perverts the cultural identity of indigenous peoples. What is worse still, community radios are being persecuted in many countries, declared as illegal because they don't have a license, and indigenous communicators are marginalized and persecuted for exercising their right to broadcasting. Notwithstanding the importance of this subject, the attention given to it by the Permanent Forum in its 10 years of existence has been extremely limited. I think there is only one recommendation on communication. The Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples dedicates a specific article, Article 16, to the right to communication. The Permanent Forum has not done very much on this question. That is why a group of indigenous organizations who work with communication from several countries are taking the floor. The first continental summit of indigenous communicators took place in Colombia. This was to show growing interest of indigenous people in this subject. We would like to reiterate recommendations that we made at the 6th and 7th session to be included on the agenda of the Permanent Forum and perhaps the World Conference. Indigenous peoples and communication must be included. We need to talk of the violations and threats to our right and explain how states have not complied with recommendations, because we need to close the digital divide. We need intercultural codes of ethics so that indigenous peoples are not denigrated by stereotypes. And we need to promote communication as a key cross-cutting theme for the development of indigenous peoples and support an international seminar specifically devoted to this subject, or at least in the preparations for the World Conference. Thank you.
I give the floor to Roberto Coraite Cruz, Confederación Sindical Única de Trabajadores Campesinos de Bolivia.
Muchas gracias.
Thank you. Madam Chairperson, I would like to greet you personally because this is the first time I've been given the floor. We persisted in our endeavors to participate here, and maybe I will digress from the specific subject of today's agenda, but Bolivia wants to talk about one of the big mistakes made in 1961, which was banning chewing the coca leaf. There were no sustainable arguments for this, and it constitutes a violation of the uses and customs of First Nations. It is also a violation of our rights and breaks with our culture. Secondly, I would like to recommend that quinoa be quinoa production be recommended because it is highly nutritional and is very important at this time because of the food crisis we are suffering from all over the world. I would also like to submit that the conclusions made in Tiquipaya and Cochabamba on respect for the rights of Mother Earth, it would be important, Madam Chair, to take into account one of the recommendations, which is reducing greenhouse gases, because we are all suffering from the impact of greenhouse gases, not just developing countries. We have seen what has happened in Japan. It is not just the poor who are suffering, it is also the middle class and large corporations. Thus, the impact of greenhouse gases will never be under control until industrialized countries and all stakeholders do something, because those who suffer most are the weakest, such as indigenous peoples and developing countries. We need to promote policies that really do make forestry conservation worthwhile, because forests are the lungs of the planet, and we need to make a distinction between those that harm biodiversity, nature, the planet. It is important that those who contribute to climate change realize what they're doing, and those who are protecting the rights of Mother Earth, such as indigenous peoples, continue their good works. That is why the peoples of Bolivia believe in sustainable community economy. This should be a new policy that should emanate from people themselves, and it should be based on respect for Mother Earth, respect for biodiversity, respect for one's own culture, and it should also be sustainable over time. And of course, this contradicts international policies and transnational policies who are only in pursuit of profit. I would like this to be taken into consideration, Madam Chair.
Christopher Peters, from the Seventh Generation Fund for Indian Development. You have the floor.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, for this opportunity to speak today. I'm honored to address this distinguished body of experts on this agenda item. The indigenous peoples of North American region express our sincere appreciation for the decision made by members of the Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues to advance the critical topic of the doctrine of discovery as a special theme of the 11th session of the forum. The historic edicts of Christendom proclaimed by Pope Alexander VI nearly 520 years ago, known around the world as the Papal Bulls of 1493, has caused far-reaching and devastatingly negative impacts on the lives, cultures, and ecosystems of indigenous peoples throughout the world. The doctrine of discovery as the theme of the 11th session of the Permanent Forum will provide an opportunity to redress the social, political, legal constructs that have resulted from the papal bulls and the accompanying edict of Terra Nullius, both of which have perpetuated ongoing genocide, colonization, and domination of indigenous peoples and our homelands. We recognize that it will provide a mechanism for indigenous peoples and governments to begin the laborious task of repudiating and deconstructing this vicious framework of colonization within our nations and communities. We commend the expert members of the Permanent Forum for their courage and vision for forwarding this important issue at this time when the world searches for a new ecologically centered paradigm and for a moral and socially conscious process of transforming and protecting the dignity, equality for all citizens of the world. Madam Chair, on March 18th and 19th, 2011, Indigenous nations and organizations from North America gathered in Blue Lake, California to discuss a number of urgent issues and propose recommendations for future work of the Permanent Forum. Mindful of the forum's final report on the ninth session dated May 19th, 2010, and its acknowledgement of the preliminary study of the impacts on indigenous peoples of the international legal construct known as the Doctrine of Discovery, prepared February 4, 2010, by Special Rapporteur Tanya Gunella Fischner. In this regard, the North American Indigenous Peoples Caucus offers the following recommendations. We reiterate a call for additional attention, studies, and documentation of the racist and genocidal doctrine of Christian discovery. We advance our appeal for a deeper exploration of the manner in which the doctrine of Christian discovery has been constructed, elaborated, applied, and extended in law, policy, and social cultural practices through both secular and religious practices, and to set the stage for its eradication and reversal as a fundamental element of colonization and imperialism with full and equal participation by indigenous peoples. We request the following recommendations of the Special Rapporteur to be acted upon: that this study shall be expanded to include a global view of this doctrine and call upon other indigenous caucuses to discuss and prepare studies documenting the impacts in their region. That an international expert group meeting be convened to discuss the findings and implications of the preliminary study of the Doctrine of Discovery, and to present its findings at the next permanent forum session in 2012, and to ascertain to what extent and how the Doctrine of Discovery and its attendant frameworks of domination are applied to indigenous peoples and our lands, territories throughout the world. We call upon the forum to take into consideration the recommendations of regional hearings on the impacts of Doctrine of Discovery on indigenous peoples held on March 14, 2011 at Pueblo Grande, Phoenix, Arizona, and all other future meetings to help shape the agenda for next year's theme. Finally, Madam Chairperson, we implore that future work of this distinguished body examine the legacy of the Doctrine of Discovery and that it remain mindful of the current and continued impacts on the sovereign and human rights of indigenous peoples of the world. The pernicious edicts of the Doctrine of Discovery of 520 years ago are directly responsible for and connected to the current policies that perpetuate treaty violations, destruction of sacred places, loss of lands, culture, and languages. It also is directly responsible for the disproportionate levels of incarceration, the violent assaults committed upon our children in boarding and residential schools, and the devastating trauma experienced by our families, communities, and nations. Madam Chairperson, without prejudice to the work and recommendation of the Doctrine of Discovery, we also support the call for a proposal for the creation of a doctrine of reconciliation. We further call upon the expert group, call for an expert group seminar on truth and reconciliation as proposed by the expert mechanism on the rights of indigenous peoples in its third report to be hosted by the High Commissioner of Human Rights, Madame Pillay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Abdurrahman Hegis from the Crimean Tatar Mejlis, representing the indigenous Crimean Tatars of Crimea, Ukraine.
Distinguished Madam Chair, Excellencies, Indigenous Elders, ladies and gentlemen, I am honored to greet you on behalf of Mejlis of the Crimean Tatar people, the representative body of the Crimean Tatars. One of the most pressing socio-economic and political problems that exist in the independent Ukraine is a legacy from the former Soviet Union, is the problem of repatriation, resettlement, and restoration of the rights of Crimean Tatar people exposed to massive deportation in 1944 from the Crimea and forcibly kept in the places of exile for decades. The situation of the Crimean Tatars in Ukraine is exacerbated by the lack of specific legislation that would regulate issues related to the repatriation, resettlement, and restoration of the Crimean Tatars' rights. In this respect, religious, linguistic, and the land issues, as well as an effective participation of Crimean Tatars in government, in governance and representative bodies, become politically sensitive. It is obvious that the elimination of the destructive consequences of deportation of the Crimean Tatar people carried out by the Soviet regime in 1944 and decades of enforced settlement in places of exile, accompanied by the discriminatory government policies, cannot be achieved without broad support from the international community in the ongoing efforts in this direction. Considering all the mentioned factors, the Majlis of the Crimean Tatar people has initiated elaboration of the International Forum on the Restoration of the Rights of Crimean Tatars to their homeland, its security and guarantee of development in Ukraine. We respectfully recommend United Nations Indigenous Peoples Permanent Forum to advise to the Economic and Social Council to hold the International Forum on the Restoration of the Rights of Crimean Tatars on their homeland, its security and guarantee of development in Ukraine. Majlis of the Crimean Tatar people is ready to assist Ukrainian government and the United Nations to develop and deliver to hold the forum. We are confident that the permanent forum is the right venue to communicate on our unresolved issues and propose their solution within this forum. We believe that change is possible and the indigenous people's identity might to be preserved. I thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you for your statement. I give the floor to Carlos Mamani from the Pueblo Aymara of Bolivia.
Thank you, Madam. Before beginning my statement, I'd like to restate a welcome for the resolution for the World Conference on Indigenous Peoples in 2014. In 2008, we'd already expressed a recommendation to this effect, that there was a need for the indigenous peoples to have this world conference. The indigenous peoples, Madam, notwithstanding the adversity caused by colonialism, have maintained and upheld our identities and thoughts. And in the permanent forum, we've therefore set forth far-reaching proposals on Mother Earth and the prospect of well-being. So in the context of the Conference on Sustainable Development, Rio Plus 20, and the World Conference of 2014 on Indigenous Peoples, it is important for account to be taken of the thinking of Indigenous peoples. And therefore, I'd like to refer to the thinking which Indigenous peoples from Amazonia have vis-a-vis nature, which they consider to be a living environment with other components. Humanity and those other components form a single community. And this goes back to the more distant past, to the very origins of indigenous peoples in terms of community, territory, and the environment. They're all part and parcel of the same history and a shared time. Indigenous peoples in Colombia teach their children that their history goes back to a time when twins gave birth to the Amazonia, with the river Amazon being formed and the various tributaries developing therefrom. And the splinters gave rise to fish. And these are all concepts according to which we are all brothers and sisters. The Guarani people continue to endeavor not to harm the earth. The idea is to develop a free, healthy life in which the indigenous peoples of the Chaco area may develop. In the area I come from, when the world was created, the Creator ensured that all the peoples of the region have a fruitful, or view the earth as a fertile mother. So we've developed rules and standards leading to a state where we live well and healthily in harmony with Mother Nature. So there is a crucial need for us as indigenous peoples to pass on this array of knowledge and visions to future generations. Hence, it's important to exercise the right to free self-determination and self-rule, as a number of constitutions and legislations recognize in our region. Given all of this, I would take the liberty of suggesting that we adopt the following recommendations. The Permanent Forum recommends that the Executive Secretary of the World Conference Rio Plus 20 to ensure that the agenda contains the indigenous vision of Mother Earth and healthy living as a fundamental contribution or recognition of the contribution of indigenous peoples to the preservation of the forests. And a number of brothers and sisters have said these are the lungs of the world. The second recommendation, the Permanent Forum recommends that the United Nations ensure that at the World Conference on Indigenous Peoples scheduled for 2014, there be an assessment of compliance with the objectives of the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. And the preamble recognizes respect for knowledge, cultures, and traditional practices of indigenous peoples, which contribute to sustainable and equitable development and proper management of the environment. Given all this, there is a need to take into account progress in implementation in terms of cooperation, enhancement, and implementation of the knowledge and visions which the indigenous peoples have vis-à-vis nature, and how this knowledge and these practices are being implemented in each of our countries, especially in the Andean region, where the rights to nature and healthy living have been enshrined in the Constitution. Thank you.
Mamani, for his statement. I now invite Mr. Nikhil Chandavarkar, Chief of the Communications and Outreach Branch of the Division for Sustainable Development, to make a statement on Rio Plus 20.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. For me, it's a pleasure and an honor to be here on behalf of the Secretariat of the Rio Plus 20 Conference. This is in particular because indigenous peoples, since Rio 92, have been very much part of the sustainable development process, and with many landmarks over the past 20 years, and we look forward very much to that continue with Rio Plus 20. As many of you know, the main entry point for indigenous peoples to interact with the Rio Plus 20 conference is through the major groups infrastructure. We have 9 major groups, indigenous peoples being one of those, and they have the organizing partners for the major groups have been extremely active in the preparatory process so far. They've made statements to the preparatory committee. They have also provided inputs through our website to the Secretary General's reports. And this is what we would expect going forward. I would like to also hark back to the many important landmarks between Agenda 21's Chapter 26, the major output on indigenous peoples that came out of the Rio 92 conference, and Johannesburg, the various declarations that many of you do know, but I think it's important to recall them here. I think in particular of the Kimberley Declaration of 2002, the Indigenous Peoples Implementation Plan of also of 2002 that came out of Johannesburg in 2004 on biodiversity, the AQUECON voluntary guidelines on biodiversity, on the issue of food security, the indigenous declaration Atitlan, Guatemala in 2002, and the Kyoto Declaration dealing with water and indigenous peoples of 2003. These are, I think, very important landmarks. I also recall the original Carioca Declaration of 1992, and we use its most important quote, "We walk to the future in the footsteps of our ancestors," as a shorthand for us as we think of preparations for Rio. The most important message that's come out of the major group's interventions to our preparatory process has been a holistic approach, a call for a holistic approach based on the human rights of indigenous, respect for the human rights of indigenous peoples, as well as an ecosystems approach, basically an approach to land, water, and resource management that is in keeping with harmony with Mother Nature. And this is certainly something that we will keep in mind. Looking forward as to what might come out, I think the bridge between the outcome of UNCSD Rio Plus 20 in 2012 and your own conference, the World Conference in 2014, will be a very important bridge. And I think through your efforts, through the efforts of your major groups who represent you in the preparatory process, as well as through all your events that you can share with us through the website. Our website is a two-way, the conference website is a two-way flow of information, and I encourage you to interact with it and to share the outcomes of your events. That our hope is that the final document, which is negotiated by member states but with the involvement of major groups and agencies of the UN system, will have explicit recognitions of many of the aspirations that you fought so hard for. A bridge, for example, to the Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, as well as the holistic approach based on both the human rights of Indigenous peoples as well as the ecosystems approach. Madam Chair, I'll stop here. If there are questions, I'd be happy to answer them. But this is a very quick overview. Perhaps I could end with a very brief calendar. We are now in a phase where by November we will be expecting inputs for a large compilation text, which will serve for negotiations. There will be a second intersessional meeting in mid-December, 15 and 16 December, which will, on the basis of the outcomes of which, a zero draft will be put together, which will come out in early January. The first few months of next year will be involved in negotiations, and then the final PrepCom will take place towards the end of May in Rio itself and the conference itself, the 4th to the 6th. So there'll be plenty of entry points. Your major group organizing partners are very active with the process, and I urge you to funnel your thoughts, your aspirations through them. They're very powerful networks. You know them, and I will stop here, Madam Chair. Thank you very much.
I thank Mr. Chandavarkar for his statement. I now give the floor to Mr. Alan Celos from the Brazilian government.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As we had the occasion of stating previously to this forum, you are all most welcome in Brazil. The United Nations Conference on Sustainable Development will be held from the 4th to the 6th of June 2012 in Rio. Official preparatory meetings will be held from the 28th to the 30th May, and other events will be held in the period in between the two official sessions. Brazil is committed to working with all stakeholders, including indigenous peoples, to achieve a significant outcome at the United Nations Conference on Sustainable Development in 2012, Rio Plus 20. To attain those results, the contributions of indigenous peoples on their experiences and proposals in what relates to objectives and themes of the conference are very important. As we all know, the objectives, the main objectives of the conference, Rio Plus 20, will be, first, renewing political commitment to sustainable development. Second, reviewing progresses and gaps in the implementation of the commitments of previous conferences. And third, identifying new and emerging issues. The two main themes of the conference will be, first, a green economy in the context of sustainable development and poverty eradication. And second, the institutional framework for sustainable development. The active and present participation of stakeholders, including indigenous peoples, will be an important part of the conference and its associated events. The Brazilian government is ready to facilitate this engagement and to continue the ongoing dialogue with indigenous peoples, working both directly in Brasilia and internationally in partnership with the Secretariat of the conference, located in the Department of Economic and Social Affairs of the UN and chaired by Mr. Sha Zhukang. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. I now give the floor to Bestina Benjamin from Nukuvoro Residents Association.
Good afternoon, everyone, brothers and sisters, and fellow indigenous people of the world. Nukuvoro Atoll is a Polynesian outer island in the Federated State of Micronesia. Our struggles are the same as thousands of other low-lying island people. Coral atolls, communities, and indigenous culture. Extreme weather now threaten our islands every day. Drought, tidal wave, king tide, typhoon, tsunamis. On low island, people are beginning to starve. Our fresh water and terrapads are gone. We have no high ground. We have no tsunami surger. Each day we risk being washed away. We are surely failing to realize the Millennium Development Goal. And our cultures and home islands are disappearing, but we wish to survive. We call on the permanent forum of indigenous issues to urge all United Nations bodies, government, global organizations, businesses, and polluters to help Nukuvoro Atoll combat climate change. Through direct assistance, provisions of free, prior, and informed consent, and following our Indigenous Climate Adaptation Program, we can share hope by showing that indigenous relations, solutions, and adaptations are often very effective. Outer islands like Nukuvoro are alone in the face of widespread disaster, and that is why we must achieve climate independence using the community earth box for food and water, Caribbean sea water, and Biarock breakwaters to grow and protect the island. And a culture center to assist our youth, with your help, we can quickly adapt to climate change. Outer island people were slow to learn that the destructive environmental change we are experiencing have been caused by the carbon emissions of the developed countries, big businesses, and the energy, timber, mining, oil, and the gas industries. Yet we know now, being the first to feel the damaging effect of climate change, that this group in their measure must be held responsible to fix the problem. It is time to give some of the resource back to help indigenous people adapt to this new world that development and money has created. In December of 2008, a 1 meter tidal wave flooded our islands and it killed nearly 80% of our fruit trees and taro pads. Livestock were washed away and homes were destroyed. New corn population suffered. Fortunately, we dug relief trenches. They saved a small remaining area of our traditional taro pads, which has provided us for centuries with food and is soon to disappear. Our food and water security will not recover, nor can we rely solely on traditional lifestyle to survive in the era of climate change. This is why we insist for priority funding for these urgent needs. Host countries fail to make allocations to indigenous communities. Our system lacks the money, tools, and supplies, so aid is not provided in a timely manner. We seek direct funding on the local level to overcome and adapt to climate change. We recommend to the United Nations, member nations, international donor communities, big businesses, small businesses, and special interest groups. To those who understand our needs, and especially those responsible for pollutions, to provide direct assistance to help implement Nucorn's Indigenous Climate Adaptation Plan. With increasingly high tide, severe weather, and natural disaster expect in years to come, we realize now that our people and our home are critically threatened by climate change. We must do something right now to prepare and adapt. In order for our indigenous culture and our home island to survive, we recommend to the permanent forum on indigenous issues to bring this work to the attention of the Office of the Secretary General to direct the WBC and ADB, the PPBT, FEA, UNOPS, ODPR, FAO, UNDP, DESA, GEF, UNIFEM, OHCHR, and all UN agencies to take action by funding a series of pilot infrastructure programs that will directly combat and demonstrate solutions to the threat posed by climate change. For our home island and millions of others, we hereby request funding to implement a comprehensive climate adaptation program on Nucor Atoll. The Nucor people are not willing to wait for the tide to wash our home and families away. We know we must act quickly to prepare our island for the future. We are ready to work together, to work smart, and work very hard to realize this goal. We must deploy and demonstrate sound method to combat climate change, setting example which other low island will follow. If we do not act quickly and work together to protect our island and culture from global climate change, this increasing storm will destroy our home life and culture. We will require international rescue. Our atolls will become uninhabitable. Our unique cultures will disappear, and we will become climate refugees. Thank you, my dear sir. Fellow indigenous people, we all must ask ourselves, and who will help us then? Who will help us then? On behalf of the Nucorn people and our home island, we thank you and humbly ask for your immediate assistance. Truly, Bestina Benjamin, Nucor Resident Associations, Nucor Atolls, and the Federated State of Micronesia, I thank you all.
Thank you for your statement. I give the floor to Florina Lopez, Red de Mujeres Indígenas sobre la Biodiversidad, Enlace Continental de Mujeres Indígenas y Foro Internacional de Mujeres Indígenas.
Good afternoon. For the recommendations on item 8, the World Conference on Indigenous Peoples 2014. Thank you, Madam and dear members of the Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues, the Network of Indigenous Women on Biodiversity, and the International Forum of Indigenous Women welcomes the resolution of the 12th of November 2010 from the UN General Assembly to organize a high-level plenary meeting of the General Assembly to be called the World Conference on Indigenous Peoples to take place in 2014. And we thus make the following recommendations. One, the General Assembly should convene interactive meetings between member states and representatives of indigenous organizations within the framework of the 11th and 12th sessions of the Permanent Forum. Two, the Office of the President of the General Assembly should appoint facilitators in order to encourage exchanges between indigenous organizations, members of the Permanent Forum, and other member states. We would discuss the modalities of the meeting and participation mechanisms. Three, the General Assembly should guarantee the participation of indigenous peoples both in the preparations as well as in the World Conference itself, paying specific attention to the participation of indigenous women and youth. Four, UN agencies, donor institutions, international cooperation, and member states should provide financial support for the consultation process and preparatory meetings with indigenous peoples' organizations. And to conclude, we would like to express our commitment as organizations of indigenous women with the leadership role of the Permanent Forum regarding the 2014 conference. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Muchas gracias.
Thank you.
Lori Johnston from the Southeast Indigenous People Center, you have the floor.
The Permanent Forum remains a new and developmental institution of the United Nations systems that must continue to adjust and reform itself to match the changing political, social, and economic circumstances of Indigenous peoples. Toward that end, the Center for World Indigenous Studies and the Southeast Indigenous Peoples Center offer these suggestions. The Permanent Forum should reform its rules to increase direct participation of Indigenous peoples' representatives by opening a day-long segment of its agenda during the annual session, by setting aside a single day for oral presentations from Indigenous peoples' delegates speaking up to 8 minutes each. It will be possible to hear all delegates who have struggled to arrive at the UN. Number two, the Permanent Forum, in cooperation with UNEP and ECOSOC, should set aside a week to hear reports from Indigenous peoples experiencing environmental depredations caused by human development activities. While the UN promotes development as an answer to poverty, it is rare that the UN or the Permanent Forum understand the adverse effects of introduced development on Indigenous peoples. It is imperative that Indigenous peoples become part of the solution to the adverse effects of induced development. An annual hearing of presentations and dialogue calling for problem descriptions and problem solutions from Indigenous peoples before the Permanent Forum can contribute to a reduction of adverse effects on the environment. Number three, the Permanent Forum would benefit Indigenous peoples worldwide by establishing Indigenous peoples' multilateral law development and local Indigenous law development as an agenda item to explore the significance and implications of Indigenous peoples' law and regulatory development in relation to UN member government laws. Number four, the permanent forum would benefit Indigenous peoples by establishing an agenda item examining the lost economic benefits to Indigenous peoples resulting from corporate and state government confiscation, occupation, or degradation of land and natural resources. The agenda should include an exploration of the processes and methods by which Indigenous peoples can be awarded economic or natural resource and land awards as payment for their losses. We ask ECOSOC to assess and project the global benefits of allowing Indigenous peoples to access the benefits of our waters, winds, and lands stolen by colonial governments and corporations and directed to the United Nations. Southeast Indigenous peoples ask ECOSOC to remit at least a portion of the payment it receives from colonial powers directly to Indigenous governments and Indigenous intergovernmental organizations so that we can more effectively work to improve the welfare of the international community of nations. Thank you.
Thank you for your statement. Wilton Littlechild, Commissioner for the Truth and Reconciliation Commission of Canada, you have the floor.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and good afternoon to all delegations. I would like to begin by supporting the call for a preparatory meeting leading up to the World Conference on Indigenous Peoples as proposed by the Sami Parliament. Also, we'd like to add our voice to the North American Indigenous Peoples Caucus statement urging full and equal participation of Indigenous peoples at all stages of the World Conference on Indigenous Peoples. As a former residential school student and as a Commissioner of Truth and Reconciliation Commission of Canada, I have lived and witnessed the legacy of the residential school system. Through my journey, I've identified five critical elements of resolving the legacy and restoring respectful relationships. These elements are truth, forgiveness, healing, justice, and reconciliation. My proposals today are aimed at achieving all five elements, resulting in a strengthened partnership between Indigenous peoples and states consistent with treaty relationships. The first proposal is to support an international expert seminar on truth and reconciliation processes. In the third session of the expert mechanism on the rights of Indigenous peoples, it was proposed that the High Commissioner on Human Rights, Her Excellency Navanithem Pillay, be encouraged to hold an international expert seminar on truth and reconciliation processes. The proposal states, and I quote, Proposal 8, International Expert Seminar on Truth and Reconciliation Processes. The expert mechanism on the rights of Indigenous peoples, A, recognizes that national truth and reconciliation processes provide an important model and mechanism for improved relations between states and Indigenous peoples, and that such processes have the potential to facilitate strengthened recognition and implementation of the rights of Indigenous peoples. B, encourages the Office of the High Commissioner to consider the possibility of preparing an international expert group seminar on the relevance of national truth and reconciliation processes as a mechanism for conflict resolution and reconciliation between states and Indigenous peoples. It is requested that the Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues support this proposal and request the High Commissioner on Human Rights to hold an international expert seminar on truth and reconciliation processes by 2013. It is further requested that the Permanent Forum be fully engaged in the international expert seminar in order to promote reconciliation between Indigenous peoples, states, the UN system as a whole, and other citizens. The second proposal relates to the ongoing development of a doctrine of reconciliation. The time is now for the international community to consider a new chapter in the world history of relations between Indigenous peoples, states, and the churches. there has been considerable high-level attention to the role of the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples in reconciliation. For instance, the Secretary General Ban Ki-moon on August 2008 identified the UN Declaration as itself an historic act of reconciliation. His Excellency stated, and I quote, "The result of more than two decades of negotiations provides a momentous opportunity for states and indigenous peoples to strengthen their relationships, promote reconciliation, and ensure that the past is not repeated." End of quote. Recently, on April 5, 2011, the Special Rapporteur, Professor James Anaya, characterized the UN Declaration as an instrument of reparation and reconciliation, stating that the Declaration is fundamentally a remedial instrument aimed at overcoming the marginalization and discrimination that indigenous people systematically have faced across the world as a result of historical processes of colonization, conquest, and dispossession. In this spirit, the UN Declaration provides a framework for reconciliation to restore respectful relationships. And on this basis, as a commissioner of the TRC of Canada, I respectfully suggest that a new doctrine of reconciliation be pursued. This follows up to the International Year of Reconciliation in 2009 and is without prejudice and indeed complements the Permanent Forum's work on a doctrine of discovery. We support the call that an international expert group meeting be convened in January 2012 to discuss the findings and implications of the preliminary study of the doctrine of discovery and to present its findings to the 11th session. I suggest that the doctrine of reconciliation be an agenda item at the upcoming World Conference on Indigenous Peoples, given its significance to peaceful coexistence for our future generations. And if I may, very lastly, Madam Chair, just announce a quick side note, but at the World Championships of Lacrosse, the Iroquois Nationals just defeated the United States 11-10, winning their third game in a row. Thank you, Madam Chair.
I thank you for your statement. Dali Sambo, member of the Permanent Forum, you have the floor.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. My comments are actually in relation to the World Conference. First of all, I want to thank the government of Bolivia for their activities toward a World Conference on Indigenous Peoples and further welcome the proposals made by Indigenous Peoples and others throughout this afternoon's discussion. The Permanent Forum members have generally agreed that the Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples will be the framework for our current and future initiatives. Such comprehensive guidelines will be useful not only in all of our future work, but the Declaration is also highly relevant to the discussion on the proposed World Conference on Indigenous Peoples scheduled for 2014. In 2007, with the adoption of the UN Declaration, the General Assembly, which we all know is comprised of the respective member states of the world community, solemnly assumed and proclaimed their obligations in accordance with the UN Charter to advance the recognition of the rights of indigenous peoples as contained in the UN Declaration. And they further noted that they are convinced that this instrument will enhance harmonious and cooperative relations between the states and indigenous peoples based on principles of justice, democracy, respect for human rights, non-discrimination, and good faith. And further, the state members of the General Assembly solemnly proclaimed that the UN Declaration is regarded as a standard of achievement to be pursued in a spirit of partnership and mutual respect. Therefore, specific to the issues of modalities of participation, as referenced by the Cabinet Chief of the President of the General Assembly, the Government of Bolivia, and now by numerous others here in the room, such as the North American Indigenous Caucus and the Sami Council, as well as a range of others. I also want to emphasize Article 18 of the UN Declaration, which provides that Indigenous peoples have the right to participate in decision-making in matters which would affect their rights through representatives chosen by themselves in accordance with their own procedures, as well as to maintain and develop their own Indigenous decision-making institutions. And furthermore, Article 19 provides that states shall consult and cooperate in good faith with the Indigenous peoples concerned through their own representative institutions in order to obtain their free, prior, and informed consent before adopting and implementing legislative or administrative measures that may affect them. Clearly, the World Conference on Indigenous Peoples is one such measure. Because the direct participation of Indigenous peoples is essential for the world community to arrive at a constructive result that will generally improve the status and conditions of Indigenous peoples worldwide, one possible consideration at this early stage in the context of the World Conference preparations is the need for an agreement in principle on the fundamental issue of equal, full, effective, and meaningful participation of Indigenous peoples at every stage of preparation, substantive agreement drafting, and any and all final outcome documents. In this way, we can be sure that our participation is consistent with the standards reflected in the UN Declaration. If such direct and equal participation cannot be agreed upon right now, at the outset of our preparations, it may not be worth it to Indigenous peoples to expend the energy, time, funds, and human resources to hold such a meeting. In this regard, it is notable that the government representatives of Canada, Australia, New Zealand, and the United States have not specifically addressed the matter of the World Conference. I can stand corrected if, in fact, they have voiced their views and observations or perspectives on this. Finally, it's worth reviewing and potentially being instructed by the process that led to the establishment of this specific forum, which included regional Indigenous and government representation, essentially in equity, and is very similar to many of the proposals that have been made by Indigenous peoples organizations today. Regional coordinators identified and ensuring equity, the opportunity for regional gatherings to decentralize decision making and bring it down to the grassroots within Indigenous regions, things of that nature. And I would welcome and thus far am encouraged by the range of proposals that Indigenous peoples have made in regard to the forthcoming World Conference, if in fact it is scheduled and does take place with a full, effective, meaningful, and equal participation of Indigenous peoples. Thank you.
Thank you, Darlene. I give the floor to Raja Devashis Roy, member of the Permanent Forum.
Thank you, Madam Chairperson. Thank you very much to Mr. Chandravarkar for being here with us. I would like to know if you have any thoughts on how we can make, I'm really jumping now to the post-Rio, having regard to how the post-first Rio mechanisms and processes dealing with sustainable development. And now I must apologize for my ignorance. I attended the Commission on Sustainable Development way back in the 1990s, mid to late 90s, and never went to the Commission for Social Development. But I suppose the Commission on Sustainable Development continues to be a major mechanism to take forward the process. And having said that, we also know, unfortunately, that Indigenous participation as one of the major groups, having to go through an ECOSOC accredited NGO, I believe, or under the roster, whatever categories. And until today, their participation in the Commission on Sustainable Development is very, very marginal. So whatever happens in Rio Plus 10, that ultimately the process and mechanism that will take forward, and now also bearing in mind that the permanent forum is now there, with its mandate on economic and social development. How do we make, one, the Commission on Sustainable Development and the Commission for Social Development and other processes indigenous peoples in a more structured manner, and how can we really have a better working relationship with this forum? And I'm not talking about the run-up to Rio Plus 20, but particularly what happens after Rio, when we follow up whatever the outcome is, whatever the global summit brings us. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Chandavarkar, can you answer the question?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Mr. Roy. It's an extremely valid question. I think for me, the biggest achievement over the last 20 years has been the institutionalization of the major groups in a way that we couldn't have imagined in Rio 92. As for those of you who were there, you realized how difficult it was for the major groups to be heard. There was the Carioca declaration, but basically you had the global forum and you had the official conference. 20 years later, fast forwarding now to 20 years later, the indigenous peoples as part of the major groups are very much integrated into the infrastructure of the Commission on Sustainable Development. So much so that if you look at the proceedings of the Commission and the preparatory commissions, they're given the floor often ahead of delegations as if they were on a par. Clearly, it is a meeting of member states, but there's an openness that wasn't there 20 years ago. That I expect to continue. I think some of the issues that you mentioned relate to the global governance aspects of sustainable development. This clearly is, at this stage, it's hard to predict, but one hears very much in the statements, both of delegations and major groups, the strengthening of the Commission on Sustainable Development. Certainly some of the considerations that you've brought up should come into the interventions of indigenous peoples as they interact with the process, so that they can be reflected in the outcome document. And then you would have a nice bridge, I think, to your own conference in 2014. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. I give the floor to Tarsila Rivera from the Foro Internacional de Mujeres Indígenas y Enlace Continental de Mujeres Indígenas.
Muchas gracias.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. This is the first time I have spoken, so I would like to congratulate my sisters and brothers who were elected for this session, and I would like to welcome the Indigenous team at the Secretariat, Chandra and Miriam. I would now like to share our recommendations with you. We drew them up at the preparatory meeting. We are the main indigenous networks of Latin America, and we did reach consensus at the Managua meeting. For Rio Plus 20, we do have some recommendations, which I'm now going to read. We recommend that the forum play a leading role and that it have a real impact on the preparations for Rio Plus 20. At the conference itself, in order to guarantee the participation of indigenous peoples and their demands, we also recommend that the UN system generate preparations in the knowledge that indigenous peoples have scant resources and that these processes are not easy to manage for indigenous peoples. Thirdly, we recommend regional meetings so that the stances of indigenous peoples be included in the final documents and recommendations of the conference. Fourthly, we also recommend that the UN system support case studies, national case studies, as part of the preparations for the conference. And finally, we recommend that the Secretariat of the Permanent Forum disseminate the relevant information on the Rio Plus 20 process. This is because although technology is more readily available, many of us do not have access to ICTs in the way that other people do. Dear members of the Permanent Forum, we will also need your support regarding recommendations to international cooperation agencies so that they can help in the preparatory phase and to guarantee good representation with the right documents to the actual conference itself. Thank you.
Statement. Mr. Chandavarkar, if you have any additional comment or final comment.
I really wanted to thank the forum for this opportunity, because I think in some ways we speak within the Department of Economic and Social Affairs of the internal coordination. I think this is an excellent example of that, where we have one intergovernmental process feeding into another one. And I think the interaction between the preparations for the World Conference on Indigenous Peoples and the Rio Conference as we go forward will be extremely important. When you speak of expert group meetings, I see here many recommendations, and certainly through our own work, we will feed this back into the preparations for the conference. But I think there will be many opportunities for synergies between your preparatory events and ours. And I think to the extent that we can have common themes, common experts, we can strengthen both conferences. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. We have just listened to the last speaker on my list. So therefore, I intend to adjourn this meeting. I would invite the Secretariat to make any announcement, if you have.
Good afternoon. Just to remind you that the Indigenous Global Caucus will meet here at 6:30 p.m. tonight in this room, and the Indigenous delegates are all asked to remain or return to this room for that meeting.
Okay. So you can stay in the room when we leave. In accordance to our program of work, tomorrow morning at 10 a.m., the forum will take up agenda item 7, half-day discussion on the right to water and indigenous peoples, in this same conference room. This meeting is adjourned.